switch. Run, I say! Run!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello there. Here we are again. The Guy James Show. Part of the Head On Radio Network, coming to you from the beautiful blue waters and sandy beaches of Southwest Florida. Glad to have all of you along with us today. We're going to try and have an interesting show for you today. I know we're going to have an interesting show for you today. Lots on tap. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Michael Shea, who wrote, produced, and directed the movie Red State. And we'll be playing some excerpts from that. Not the video excerpts, because it won't do you any good. but anyway, we'll be playing some audio from that. And you'll say, well, you'll think it's really great. Interesting. Very interesting. We are going to have something we haven't had in a while today. Not in a long while. We, as I explained to some folks on the chat room, and hello to everybody over in the Hit On Radio Network chat room. As I explained to them the other day, I was talking on the air about right-wingers, radical religious right-wingers. And lo and behold, somebody listened in and must have alerted all their friends and neighbors, the wackos, and we got a flood of email from them. So we're going to be having that. You talk about hate mail, these people know how to write hate mail. And we'll be having that coming up, a segment of Republican love, a few minutes of Republican love, coming up a little later on in the program. Looking forward to that. And what else we got on tap here today? Well, I don't know. Hey, just to clear something up, I wasn't clear on what I said yesterday. I think we had a real good caller yesterday, asked the question, can Bush be impeached for being incompetent? I say yes. Didn't fully answer that. Yes, because lying is a misdemeanor, and I think incompetence is what drove him to lie to us. He got backed in the corner, didn't know how to get out of it, and then he lied again over this foolish lie. He showed us his willingness to lie over this Rumsfeld thing. A week before, he said he wasn't going to fire him. Then when he explained that he did have him step down, he didn't want to. You know, that's why he said what he said. He admitted that he lied anyway. He's a pathological liar. He lies every single day, all that he can, and I think we know that. So, yes, I think he can be impeached for that. He's like I said, he's had to lie to cover up his monumental incompetence. And in a way, I don't blame him for some of those lies. After all, would you want the whole world to know that you went to war without having a plan for the war, for after the war? I don't think so. Not having a plan for after the war is gross negligence. Or incompetence, no matter how you look at it. Robbing a bank is a high crime, but running a telephone pole into a telephone pole with your car on a sunny day with no traffic is probably a misdemeanor. And it says high crimes and misdemeanors. So we shall see. We shall see. Like I said, a lot coming up on the program today. One thing I wanted to ask, and something has been very, very quiet, very quiet. Whatever happened to the Foley investigation? Didn't they promise us a quick decision on it? Not that I give a damn what happens to Mark Foley, but you know, now that the election is over, are they thinking that we don't care about that anymore? Do they think for a moment that we don't care if Hastert and other key Republicans knew all about Foley and kept quiet about it for political reasons? I do care about that. I want to know, and I want you to know. I know you want to know. So let's be asking around and find out what the hell the holdup is on that. I tried to find out today, and I could not. Of course, it's not a good time to try and get any answers from Washington right now. It's virtually asleep. I'm hoping that in Nancy Pelosi's first 100-hour plan that she's talking about, that we get something meaningful done about ethics in the Capitol building. Some serious reform, something that really means something this time around. No more lobbyists roaming the halls of Congress, or in some cases actually on the floor of the House and in the cloakroom. We've seen enough of that. And I know you've certainly voiced your displeasure over it. But right now, I'd like to know how they're doing with that Foley investigation. What do you think? What do you think? Are they going to sweep it under the rug? And I think we've got, 780 days left, the worst administration in history? Yes, we're down to 780 days. Do you think you can stand 780 days? I don't know. I don't want to try. I really don't want to try. We had Wesley Clark out yesterday making some noise. Do you think he will run? Will he throw his hat in the ring? If he does, he said he's not going to make the same mistake he did the last time by getting in too late and not having an organization built and not being able to raise enough money. That was surely some problems he had. So we'll see. We'll see. If you get in, why welcome? You know, Wesley, welcome to the fray. Welcome to the fray. What else we have on here today? I do want everybody to remember, you know, I've been reading everything and listening closely to all this mess in Iraq right now and the negotiations that are going on. Well, there aren't any negotiations going on, but the talks between our fearless leader, Junior Bush, and al-Maliki. By the way, Bush yesterday suffering another humiliation at the hands of al-Maliki. Canceling a meeting with the President of the United States, the most powerful man on the planet. Told him thanks, but no thanks. I won't have dinner with you tonight. Will we ever know the real reason for that? But it was a slap in the face to George W. Bush. There's no other way you can put it. No other way you can put it. And also, I noticed that George Will, you know, these righties, they just can't seem to get their facts straight. He told the whole story about Jim Webb. You heard the story about Jim Webb and that prick of a president, Junior Bush, didn't you? About being at a reception for the senators in the White House, and Junior Bush, knowing full well, that Webb is protective of his relationship with his son and probably a little antsy about him being in Iraq, Bush comes up and says, "Well, how's the boy doing?" "Well, Mr. President, I'd like it if we could bring him home." "That's not what I said. That's not what I ask you. How's he doing?" "Well, Mr. President, that's between me and my son." That was the wrong guy to come up and say that to, I think. Webb showed Bush once again for exactly what he is. And if I heard it, I wonder if it's true. Webb said that he wished he'd have slugged him. I wouldn't mind seeing some fisticuffs around there. That'd be kind of refreshing, don't you think? Have all these guys make us think that they're so prim and proper and righteous that they'd never come to that they'd never get into a shouting match and cuss each other out and, you know, have a good old-fashioned duking it out thing going on? You know, you can go a little too far with civilization. I think sometimes in the House and the Senate we are a little bit too civilized. Who was it back in the early 1800s? Whipped out the old cane and started on some guy. I forget who it was, but I don't think we should go that far. Anyway, it would be refreshing to see these guys be a little more human than, you know, my esteemed colleague and all that stuff. Yeah, yes, 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 yes. I know civility is a nice thing. But just now and then, just now and then, that's all I'm saying. I would like for things to, people just to be real, be what they are, not put on airs for the rest of us. You know, that time that the open microphone caught Cheney, or Bush telling Cheney, pointing to the, I can't think of his name, from the New York Times, to point out, so that guy's a real asshole. Well, if you feel that way, go ahead and say it. Who cares? I don't care. People talk like that, so that's how it is. But anyway, what I was getting to before I got off the mark there, and I so often do that, I've noticed a trend here by the right to try and switch the blame for this whole thing over onto the Iraqis. Have you noticed that? I surely have. This is not Iraq's fault. It most assuredly is not Iraq's fault. You know, if we leave and put the blame on them, it's only going to further infuriate them. You know, we came in and destroyed their infrastructure, their roads, their bridges, their water plants. What else? Their electricity plants, their governmental structure, their police, their military, their educational structure. We ruined it all. We ruined their lives. It's not their fault. The fault lies with George W. Bush. I think we all now realize that Iraq would have been far better off if we'd stayed completely out of there. Yes, oh yes, yes, yes. Saddam Hussein was a bad man, and he did a lot of bad things. When you throw it on the scales of what we've done to him and what Saddam has done to him, hey, it's no contest. They would have gotten around to getting rid of Saddam eventually and establishing order a hell of a lot quicker than we're going to do it, if we ever do it, and I have very little faith in that. Oh, gee whiz, we got the phone lines lit up already. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yeah, Guy. Hey, I still can't get you, but I wanted to call because I don't know if you brought up the fact about Robert Gates. Now, this guy goes back to the Iran-Contra back in 86 and 87. The guy is really dirty. I don't know if you've checked into his background or not.
Oh, he's another one that's got no business being anywhere near the U.S. government.
Exactly. Just like they're bringing back the old James Baker and Henry Kissinger. All these are from Watergate, Iran-Contra. They're all dirty and they're all still corrupt.
Just right-wingers that they keep recycling over and over again.
Exactly.
I can't think of the other one's name.
Perlman, or
no, that him. I can't think of the other guy's name, but he's an undersecretary someplace now. And they're even bringing Kissinger back in for advice.
I know.
Okay,
I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Hey, thank you, Diane. Bye-bye. 13 minutes after the hour, we'd like to thank Billy Shears for sending us some great music. I should appoint him the music director for the program. It doesn't pay very well, Billy. Doesn't pay very well at all. Pays the same as the show host. It's the same check, really. Okay. 13 minutes after the hour, we've got Michael Shea coming up in just a few minutes. We'll be having him along. And, you know, I heard and witnessed a video yesterday that I want to play for you right now. It's about the late, great Paul Wellstone. Would that we had 100 Paul Wellstones in the United States Senate. My God, what a different country this would be. But I wanted to play this for you, looking backwards and to a man who could look forward.
According to polls, Minnesota voters consider the war in Iraq the biggest election issue. It was 4 years ago this month that Congress voted to approve the war, and 4 years ago this week that Senator Paul Wellstone died in a plane crash. Tonight, an unusual reality check. What Wellstone predicted and what came true. Wellstone was one of 23 senators to vote against the war in Iraq. And 3 weeks before his death, he predicted the invasion would bring more terrorism, civil war, and instability.
There have been questions raised about the nature and urgency of Iraq's threat and our response to that threat.
That was then. Now we know Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction, that U.S. intelligence was faulty.
The United States could post tens of thousands of troops in Iraq, and in so doing, we risk countless lives of United States soldiers and innocent Iraqis.
In fact, there are currently 133,000 troops in Iraq, but
Troop levels have risen above 150,000. 2,820 Americans are dead. More than 20,000 wounded. Estimates of Iraqi dead range from 30,000 to 655,000.
The United States could face soaring oil prices and could spend billions both on a war and a years-long effort to stabilize Iraq after an invasion.
This prediction also came true. Oil prices rose to record levels, topping $72 a barrel this year. Currently, oil prices are about $60 a barrel. The cost of the Iraq War and the War on Terror so far, about $482 billion.
So looking back upon that time, when the people on the left were calling all of us who thought Paul Wellstone was absolutely correct, he and some others as well, you remember those days? You remember how the Democratic Congress, most of them, many of them anyway, were intimidated by the people on the right? You remember how so many people on the left were being intimidated by those on the right? The right-wing media was going crazy. The Ann Coulters, the Michelle Malkins, the O'Reillys, the Hannitys, all the right-wing no-good bastards on there telling everybody that we were un-American. We were un-American. Oh, yes, we were un-American, and we were all wrong. We were all wrong. Why, wasn't it... I'm trying to think who it was. Said I would not be surprised that within a year there would be a statue built to George W. Bush in some square in Baghdad. Do you suppose they feel like building a statue to George W. Bush in Baghdad right now? I don't think so. I think most people in Baghdad would damn well rather see that statue of Saddam Hussein put back up than have ever seen the likes of military troops from the United States of America in their country. Don't kid yourself. We were right. We were right to voice our opinion. And our opinion was absolutely correct. Millions of us on the left said this would lead to quicksand for the American military, which it has done. Millions of us on the left said it would lead to countless American deaths, and it has done so. And I don't think anybody, even the most pessimistic of us on the left, could have dreamed how many Iraqi people would be killed in this war. How many have been at this time. So I want all these right-wing talkers and all these right-wing fundies and everybody else that's so passionate about George W. Bush and his war, how we've got to win and we've got to do this and we've got to do that and how the left is all wrong. I want them to remember who was right all along in this. That's not gloating. That's telling the truth. It's not bragging if you're right. And it's got nothing to do with being wrong or right. It's the fact that we knew. We knew. We knew. We knew it. We knew it all along. That this would be an American tragedy. And a tragedy for the Iraqi people. And our predictions were exactly correct. We found no weapons of mass destruction. We've done nothing for the Iraqi people. Even today, you hear them say once again that, oh, they're just talking about the bad stuff. It's that liberal media talking about the bad stuff. There is nothing good to talk about on the right. Nothing. It's time they admit that. I get so sick of hearing it from them. We're going to have that Republican love segment on our program a little later today. And, talk about the meaning of words. George W. Bush talks about, we're not going to change the course, but he's going to stay the course. Stay the course, stay the course. And then his White House comes out and said, well, that's not what we meant all along. You're damn right that's what they meant. It is what they meant. You know, the meanings of words change. Just like 2,000 years ago, the word Christian meant someone who followed Christ. You know, someone who fed the hungry and healed the sick and hung out with society's undesirables and judged not lest he be judged. And now it means someone who tells the hungry that it's their fault. Someone that doesn't care if the sick have health insurance and condemns people for loving each other. I really don't like the new definition of Christian at all. Not at all. It makes me sad. But that's what it is nowadays to most people. I'm shocked when I hear the fundies talk about this war and how, yes, Christ... you know, we ask the question, what would Jesus do? Could anybody... If you're a Christian, even if you're not a Christian, if you're a Muslim, if you're a Buddhist, no matter what you are, if you have some religious faith of any kind, you respect the fact, even the Muslims respect the fact that Christ was a prophet. Would you not heed his words? Could anybody with a reasonable mind from any religion say that Christ would be for this war? That Christ would be for bombing and killing thousands and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis and American soldiers as well? No, I think the question to ask whether you are religious or not, what would Jesus do, is perfectly legitimate. It's perfectly legitimate where it comes to the acts of the American military and this Bush administration. An administration that at first was said to be Christian. I think that is blasphemy. These people running this war aren't Christian. They have no idea what Christianity is. They have no idea of the love, what the love for their fellow man is and their fellow human beings on this planet. They have no idea, nor do they care. They've shown no inclination whatsoever to care. They've shown no empathy. I honestly believe that we have a president of the United States right now. We have a vice president of the United States who are complete, utter sociopaths. And for me, that's the worst thing I can say about anybody. I can't say anything worse than that. Many times even murderers are not sociopaths. Sociopaths have no feelings for their fellow human beings. In their hearts, they have no feelings for human beings at all. They only care about their own well-being and what they say and what they do. That is a sociopath. That is the worst kind of... the very worst of God's creations. And I cannot and I will not forgive this administration for acting in such a manner. I never, never, never could. Well, it's time for us to pause for a break. We'll do that right now, and we'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Of all. Come, you masters of war. Here they build the big guns. Here they build the death planes. Here they build all the bombs. Here they hide behind walls. Here they hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. And you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. like Judas of old. You lie and deceive. A world war can be won. You want me to believe, but I see through your eyes, and I see through your brain, like I see through the water that runs down my drain. You fasten all the triggers for the others to fire, and then you sit back and watch when the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansion while the young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud. He's thrown the worst fear that can ever be hurled. Fear to bring children into the world. For threatening my baby, unborn and unnamed. You ain't worth the blood that runs in your veins. How much do I know but to talk out of turn? You must say that I'm young. You must say I'm unlearned. But there's one thing I know, I'm younger than you. Even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Or will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find, when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul. And I hope that you die, and your death will come soon. I follow your casket by the pale afternoon. I watch while you're lowered down to your deathbed. And I stand over your grave till I'm sure that you're dead.
And we're back, everybody. Glad you're all with us here this beautiful Thursday afternoon. Gosh, I almost forgot what day of the week is. The last day of November. And you know what that means in Florida here? That means hurricane season officially comes to a close at midnight tonight. And that means we got off totally unscathed this year. And I got to tell you, that's a big relief to everybody who lives in Southwest Florida, all over Florida. So thank the good Lord for that. Man, oh man, that was a big worry the past couple of years. Hey, as promised, I promised you a great guest today. And sometimes we get famous people on the program. You know, we get your Mario Cuomos and your James Carvels and those kind of people. But the people I enjoy having the most on the program is somebody that's had a profound influence on me, has done some profound work. And Michael Shea, who wrote, produced, and directed The Red States, the movie, is with us. Michael, are you with us?
Yeah, hi, Guy.
Well, it's really good to have you along today. And I was speaking with Michael just a little bit before we went on the air here today. I was telling him, and I think I can speak for just about everybody that's activists who are into politics and even people who aren't, that his movie will affect you. It's one of those ones. You know, my favorite movie of all time is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, great movie.
And I walked out of there that day thinking, you know. That's one of those ones you walk out of the theater thinking about. And yours, after I watched it, I believe it's, what, an hour and 21 minutes long?
Yeah.
I got to admit, it affected me. It really did. And first of all, to start off the program here, let's let everybody know where we can get that, and then we'll do it again at the end of the program.
Okay. We are selling DVDs, and also people can set up screenings in their community at our website, which is redstatethemovie.com. And you can also email me from there for comments or questions.
All right. I really think everybody needs to do that. Have you had a lot of screenings around the country? This hasn't been out all that long, has it?
No, we've only been out for a couple of months, and we've been slow to build with the screenings. We've had a couple dozen, I've attended them whenever possible, and it's been great. The Q&A afterwards have been a lot of fun, and it's been a really good experience.
Oh, I envy your Q&As on this. I really do. I go out and do some of that myself, and I love that part more than anything. And following up a film like this, I keep calling it a film, but it's a DVD. But
that's fine.
It's just wonderful. I mean, it's really wonderful. If you will, you can explain it a lot better than I. Tell us the premise, what you started out with here and why.
Sure thing. First, I want to thank you for all the kind words. It means a lot when people are impacted by the movie. It is why I made it. So,
well, it is one of those movies you watch, and I swear as you're watching it that it's coming through that you meant to touch people with this. I mean, it's really coming through.
That's really great. Let me go to the origin of the movie. I had, like I'm sure many people out there, I was quite depressed, there's no other way to put it, after the election in 2004, and specifically about the president being reelected. And so for a while I was just angry and you know, kind of mad at the people who voted for him, you know. And then I realized after it kind of wore off that that was ignorant of me and arrogant too. And so instead of being mad at, you know, those people I was calling, you know, rednecks and fools, I decided to just, you know, drop that and go out and talk to them and hear their reasons. So I got together a camera crew and spent some time getting ready, and we went out in the spring of 2005 and spent a few months on the road talking to people all over the red states.
Well, were you prepared for what you saw?
Well,
I think I know the answer to this question from some of your looks into the camera. I don't think you were prepared for some of the things you heard.
Well, no, I wasn't. I mean, you know, sure, to some extent, you know, but at the same time, there were things that surprised me, and you know, one of those things was how frequently gay marriage came up. You know, if you watch the movie, you'll think, wow, you know, I really brought that as an agenda, but I didn't. I wanted to talk a lot about the war, to be honest with you, and people didn't want to talk about that, but they did want to talk about gay marriage, and that did shock me because I couldn't figure out how that really affect people's lives in the way that some of these other issues might.
They had been told that it would. And I saw no indication in that whole program where you tried to push further that subject at all. It was them that brought it up.
Yeah, and that kind of, that I guess would be the thing to me that maybe is most meaningful about the movie, and that is that I think, you know, with the inclusion of Justice Sunday, which I'm sure some of your listeners are aware of what that is or was, you kind of see how the ideas get disseminated on that side of the political spectrum. And I found that to be chilling, you know, to go out and kind of have the same conversation over and over again instead of, you know, connecting on a different level.
It's chilling to me to know that there are that many people who are that impressionable, so easily swayed, so easily molded and shaped into what the political leaders want them to be, and it's also chilling to know that we have leaders knowing that's exactly what they can do with a great number of people and have done it. Let's go to one, and I'll play some of these clips here and have you explain these. These are some people that we met in the program, and I believe the first one was the what I call the Walmart group. Isn't that right?
That's right. This is a family in Rosebud, Arkansas.
Arkansas.
And they were wonderful people. I enjoyed talking with them, and you'll hear what they have to say.
Okay, we'll play this. It's about a minute and a half long. Here we go.
Walmart buys your way. That's what Walmart is. In my opinion, that's what Walmart is, as big as it is today. It's because they give the government enough money, either behind the scenes or whatever, to buy their way. So the government won't do anything about their monopoly ship that they're doing in this country is terrible.
You just gave a great, anti-capitalist rant against the largest corporation on the planet. A rant I completely agree with you on. I have never set foot in a Walmart, and I never will, because they don't pay their employees a living wage.
No, I still like to work for them. But they're a joke.
So again, I mean, is this something that you just don't look at when you're voting? Is it just the social issues outweigh the economic ones?
I voted for George Bush because he's not for same-sex marriage. He's not basically. I don't think the man is for the gays taking over the nation, which they're trying to do. They don't really want a man that's for the homosexuals, and he's. He's for abortion. That is not what this country needs.
Now here we have a man that was talking about what a joke Walmart is, that he used to work for them, that they don't pay decent wages and all that, and skips right into the homosexual agenda and abortion. It was a wild leap, I thought.
Well, you asked me earlier about being surprised, and this is one of the things. I mean, as I said there in the clip, but it's worth repeating is these folks are, and I know you only heard one voice, but it's a family of four that I'm talking with there, and they're Democrats, or at least they used to be. I mean, these are people who are worried about the corporate influence on their lives, and come from that, I guess you could say, progressive, streak that the Heartland, had 100 years ago, And to see him shift so seamlessly from that to, to this demonizing of homosexuals and so forth was shocking to me. Because again, the one directly impacts his life, where the other, I don't see how it can.
I have to admit, that was the first place in the movie where my neck snapped, because I was like what? I'll bet you a dollar to a donut that old man, I don't know how old he was, he's probably not as old as he looks, but I'll bet you anything, involved in that family somewhere along the line, they were most definitely Roosevelt Democrats. I think you could bet on that.
I think it's yes. I mean, definitely. I mean, off camera, they said things of that nature. But that gentleman was a Vietnam veteran, and some of the other, members of his family there that we were speaking with, between the four of them, they received, I believe, 5 government checks. None of them worked. They all had disability or other issues, and yet, they didn't really care about government.
No,
they said that God provides for them. So it was, it was a shocking moment. I guess I like to think of myself as practical, and I don't understand the disconnect between the ideal and the action.
No, you got me. I watched that, and I think the word you used was perfect, seamless. He went right into that, and I was like, whoa, wait a minute. The next character that we had on the program, I believe his name is Dennis.
Yes, Dennis Mansfield. He's a businessman and a pastor in Boise, Idaho.
Oh, in Boise, okay. You might be interested, folks, to hear Dennis's take on this. I thought this one was Well, this one is interesting.
Really, I think one of the most interesting subparts of the red state, blue state debate is actually within the red states. And that's the debate between the neoconservatives and the faith-based conservatives. I think the liberals have it wrong. They think we're all this one amalgamated mass of conservatives who are, you know, shine in the red states. It's not true. Those of us who are conservatives and call Christ the king of our lives realize that we really serve a kingdom and not a democracy. In a sense, we're citizens in two cultures at the same time. We are Americans. We really realize that the longer, bigger picture, sort of the eternal picture, is that we're also citizens of a king, and his name is Christ. His name is Jesus.
Hadn't heard it put quite that way before. There's another one of those neck-snapping moments for me. I guess that one, though, I probably could see it coming a little easier. How did you run across this guy?
Well, that brings up a bigger question, which is how we found our subjects in general. And I did a lot of research before I left town here in California on where I wanted to go and kind of what people I might find. And some of them I had set up interviews with in advance. And Dennis was one of those people because he had written a couple of op-eds in the Boise papers, and I came across those and then found a way to contact him. So he had been, I guess what you could say, politically active. Although none of the people in the movie are, with the exception of the Justice Sunday folk, are professional politicians. You know, he was one of those who, a citizen activist, I guess you could say.
Okay. The Walmart family, I had this impression that you were driving down the road one day and they were sitting on the front porch or something, and you stopped and said, "Hey, can I talk to you?" What's the real story there?
Well, that actually did happen in many occasions. You know, like we set up some interviews in advance, and then other places we would just go up and stop people on the street and ask them if they would talk to us. The Walmart family is an interesting story, though, because a neighbor who lives down the street from me, I ran into him one day and I told him what I was about to go do, and he said, "Oh my God, you have to go meet my family." And the Walmart family is his family.
Wow. And oh, hey, I know one thing I wanted to ask you too. There's a very nice couple. Let me say a mixed couple. One liberal and one conservative that you met somewhere. They're from Texas, I believe.
Oh, the folks I met. Yeah, we met them at Mount Rushmore.
And you, they invited you to dinner if you ever made it down that way. Did you?
Unfortunately, no. We didn't make it to Houston. I really we had hoped to, but I. And it just didn't work out.
I found that they were a very interesting couple. Tell our listeners a little bit about those folks. I like that a lot.
Yeah, well, they were. And you know, this brings up a way for me to say, you know, the thing I found personally most interesting about the experience was how much I liked a lot of the people I met, and how, you know, we would enjoy a meal together or a conversation before we started shooting, and then we'd start shooting and the tone changed a little bit. You know, so... You know, that was always confusing as well. But these folks, we were at Mount Rushmore, and we were, you know, walking around doing, I guess, what you call man-on-the-street interviews. And this couple was up there on vacation, and we stopped and spoke with them. And the man was quite conservative, but his wife was much more liberal. And, you know, the interesting thing was they really, it seemed to work for them. They got along fine and had, you know, I guess a good union, you could say, even from disparate views.
Yeah, so one wonders about that. I mean, that's definitely a couple that canceled each other out at the polls, I'm sure. I'm just wondering if you ever made it down to have dinner with them. They were so cordial to you and so nice. And that brings up another question before we get on with the rest of them. Did you have any trouble during this time? Did you ever get threatened, or did you ever have any big problems?
Never. Everyone, you know, that we spoke with was very friendly and very helpful. And, you know, sure, there were people who declined the request, who didn't want to be on camera, but even they were polite and friendly about it. You know, it was a great experience. And, you know, the thing that, and I guess that's what, I know the movie isn't the most hopeful movie at the end about coming together, but I guess I do still think that there is, you know, some decency in all of us that we need to reach out to.
Well, moving on, we came to a lady that, well, her name is Gladys. And I'd have to say Gladys was probably, to me, the most interesting person in the movie.
Yeah, she's the star.
No doubt about it. Tell us a little bit, and then I'll play this clip from Gladys.
Gladys Gill is the state director of Concerned Women for America.
Now, that sounds nice, doesn't it?
Of Mississippi, yes. Concerned Women for America is a large women's group. They boast 2 to 3 million members.
Ooh.
They were founded by the wife of Tim LaHaye, who writes those Left Behind books, if you're familiar with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very actively involved in politics. And this is, well, I guess it's worth saying, I asked her a question about states' rights and in relation to medical marijuana and assisted suicide out here on the West Coast. And she kind of got off topic.
Ah, that's how we started on that. Okay, should I go ahead and play that clip now and we can talk some more about her? Here we go with Gladys.
I'm not a segregationist, but I don't necessarily want to sell my house to someone that I think would not be a good neighbor to the people around me. I think you need to be able to practice discernment.
I want to make clear I'm understanding you. When you say you're not a segregationist, but you want to be able to choose who you sell your house to, that they'd be good to your neighbors. Are you talking about black people or just people in general?
Just people in general. I don't want to be forced to sell my house to somebody because I'd be sued if I didn't. Because then I do run away from a neighborhood and leave the neighbors behind me to just whatever fate befalls them, and that's not good.
But how far do we take that thinking? Like, does a store owner have a right to say, I don't want to sell candy bars to this person, but I'll
absolutely
sell them to this?
Absolutely.
And on down the line, I mean,
absolutely.
We can, anything that anyone
property
is...
Property rights need to be restored. I think we lost more than we gained over civil rights. I hope to see them repealed. I certainly hope to see affirmative action repealed. I hope to see the Housing Act repealed so that people can get back to building their own neighborhoods again. And as far as Ashcroft coming down on something that was done in the state, it's just comical to hear this criticism after all these years. I mean, I think it's hilarious.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know where you folks were when we were trying to hang on to states' rights.
I was two, I think.
Yeah, right.
In fact, I was born the year the Civil Rights Act was passed.
Yeah,
so.
Right. So you don't know what life was like when we had liberty to do what we needed to do in our own lives.
And you don't know what life was like either when you would drive through the South and see restrooms with white only and colored on it only and people sitting in the back of the bus, do you?
Well, you know, that does seem to be what she is pining for.
Oh, yes.
You know, I hate to say it, but, you know, Gladys was the most shocking person to me, and if anyone watches the movie, you'll see her views on abortion and other issues are equally as shocking. She was, well, by this point in the trip, I think we were 7,500 miles into the journey, so I'd kind of gotten used to what I was seeing, and then...
Where was Gladys?
In Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And Gladys, you know, she surprised me. Well, I just never thought I would run into somebody who was wishing for the good old days of segregation.
Well, I could tell that by the look on your face. It was rather you had quite you know, folks. How much does this DVD cost?
It's $15.95.
Well, it's worth many times that, but it's worth the price of that just to see Michael's look on his face after this interview, or during it, because, this one here is one of the people, and I mean, you're not saying it, I am, but This is one of the persons that you would have expected, like in Vicksburg, Mississippi, who wouldn't celebrate the 4th of July until 1944, I think it was.
Right.
She was pining for those old days, no doubt about it. I hadn't seen it done so openly in quite a while. I think we got a call. I've got a caller here that may want to ask a question. Let me see if I can do this right here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. You got a question for Michael?
Yeah, this is Sarge.
Hi, Sarge.
Hi, Sarge. From Mississippi.
Oh, from Mississippi.
Yes, I wanted to ask him, did he realize the strength of the Southern Baptist on the political scene in Mississippi? Because that is very predominant here.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, my movie essentially focuses on the role of the religious right, for lack of a better term, on the Republican Party and on our politics at present. It was indeed the story of that election, and it is what I focus on.
Okay, and did you notice the emphasis on the Democrats being bad because they were liberal? They considered them liberal, like liberal was some kind of bad thing, and yet no one could explain what a liberal was.
Sarge, that's fascinating that you asked that, because one of the very first interviews that I did and one of the first ones that appear in the film is I'm in Wyoming, and I was talking to an old gentleman, a grandfather at a rodeo, and he claims that he's a Democrat. And so I asked him, you know, why he didn't vote Democrat anymore. And he said because they became too liberal for him. And so I asked him, well, could you tell me, give me some examples of how they're too liberal? And he couldn't. You know, he had no reason. He just said, well, they're just too liberal. So I was left to conclude that, you know, Rush Limbaugh and others have been telling him that for a couple of decades now, and it just sunk in.
Yeah, it's been that way because I grew up here. I grew up right in the town I'm in, and I'm a Vietnam era disabled veteran. So I remember the days. In fact, Walter Payton of the Chicago Bears was my playmate as a child and also my high school classmate. Oh. And I can remember him and I playing football in my backyard as boys. And when we'd get up, it'd be a hot day, so we'd get up, go to the drugstore to get ice cream and stuff. And Walter had to go back in this room where there was like a closet, and it was hot, and the fan was blowing, and they were packed in like sardines. And I was sitting out in an air conditioning area, and plenty of room, and at a table. And I asked my adopted father, "How come Walter can't come in here?" And I was told, "Don't ever ask that question again." There was no explanation; it was not to be asked. I'm gonna hang up and let you come in on that, okay?
Thank you, Sarge.
Thanks, Sarge.
Yeah.
That's a fascinating story. I'm sure that, you know, a lot of people that are just a little older than me have stories very similar to that. And it shows you that, you know, the to use that dirty word, liberal, you know, the thrust of our history is liberal when it comes to rights. And, you know, we have repeatedly, you know, opened the door for more people to claim those rights. And, you know, I find that something to be very proud of as an American, and it's why we have to stand up against these folks right now.
Well, you know, Michael, if you look at my website, I am proud of the fact that I'm a Democrat. I'm a yellow dog Democrat, and I also am a liberal Democrat. I'm not going for this progressive thing. They can demonize liberal all they want to. I am not going to budge off of it. Not now, not ever.
I'm with you. Well, you know, I say it in the movie. I say I'm a liberal. You know, I'm proud of it, too.
And it's nothing to be, it's certainly nothing. You know, we have the old John F. Kennedy speech about, you know, if it's that kind of liberal you're talking about, then call me liberal. And I know that's how you feel and how I feel. I refuse to let what I am be demonized by the other side. I'm not, anyway. I want to, you were in Jackson, Mississippi at the time. You started and you went out to 10.
We actually went north first. We went up I-5 to then cross to to cross into red territory, to use the phrase, in Nevada, and so we went through the north part of the the mountain states and so forth, and we basically did a big loop. But we went up north in California and then started going east, and went all the way as far east as Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh.
And then we started making our way back through the south, back west. It was great. I'd driven across country many times before, but I'd never taken so much time to do it and stopped in so many small towns.
Oh, that's the way to do it.
It was fabulous. I recommend it to everybody. It's a great way to go out and meet people and see the country.
Did you leave a lot of tape on the cutting room floor?
Oh, absolutely. We shot about 300 hours of footage.
Oh.
And as you said yourself, the movie's an hour and 20 minutes, so that obviously leaves a lot of tape. But, I'm glad you asked that, because it's worth saying that, the people in this movie are not extremists. They are, I think, fairly representative of certain aspects of the Republican Party. And there were people that I met who were extremists, people who were so anti-immigration that they wanted to close the border entirely and deport anyone of color, and people who were advocating the death of homosexuals. And those people are not in the movie because they were too extreme, and I didn't think it was fair to tar the Republicans with that brush. There's a lot of extremists like that who are on the cutting room floor.
Oh, my. And plus the fact that you'd have had to break out another CD, wouldn't you? You got 80 minutes on there. Yeah. You had to make this a 2-CD album.
Right.
I want to go to what I think, to me, there's one piece of your piece of work here that I was highly offended over. And I don't think I've ever seen anybody talk about this in such an insulting way and such a condescending way, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. We're talking about the lady who was with the Family Research Council.
Yeah, Leave It to Beaver story?
I think this is just amazing. You want to set it up and then I'll play it for everybody?
Sure. We were at Justice Sunday, which was in Louisville, Kentucky, and the Family Research Council and Dobson and all of them were there. And at the press conference, I wanted to talk to a couple of them, but this woman came over and kind of, distracted me, And I asked her, what the big fight was about, and she gives us this long-winded Leave It to Beaver story.
Well, here we go with it. You're going to love this.
Why are we fighting so much about, and it seems like both sides want to tell each other how to live and what to do.
Oh, no. I don't think that's the case at all. And for one thing, I don't recognize that there's this great fight. Here's something for your documentary. The way that I see life, myself personally, okay, and I'm just a girl. Granted, an old girl, but I'm just a girl. It's like life right now is just one giant episode of Leave It to Beaver. Really. Let's say that Ward is the law in and of itself, the government. Let's say that June is the government itself. Ward is the Constitution. June is the governing keepers of the law. You got Wally, who's the older brother, and he knows that living by the law and honoring the government, you're going to have harmony. And then you got the Beave, who wants to keep pushing the envelope because he wants to try things his own way. And that's fine. He's entitled to try things his own way. But when he knows he's in trouble and he's going to do things that are out of bounds, he falls out of sync with the family, and the family has to go in and rescue him. Well, it's kind of that way as a big picture of what we're at right now as a growing nation. We have Ward, the law. We have June, the government. And we have those individuals who see honoring the government, honoring the law, worked initially, works harmoniously when everybody abides by it. And then you have the little brothers who just, want to do things differently. They want to take things outside the level of the law. They want to do things that are contrary to the law, contrary to the way society's proved that it can work. And eventually they get in trouble and they find out, hey, it doesn't work after all. And then Wally and June and Ward have to go and rescue the kid. Because once again, he was wrong in his efforts and his attempt. There's not a fight there.
So who's
it's a growing family.
So who's the beef?
Well, you'll probably get really upset with me for saying it's probably the liberals. Because the Republicans, like Wally, pretty well know that everything works harmoniously when we all walk together in one accord, when we follow the law, when we abide by the law. And then if you have those who say, well, you know, I don't think that law is good enough anymore. I think the law ought to change. Well, that's kind of like the little brother who wants to push the envelope, who wants to, you know, say, I want to make marriage for boys and not for boys and girls. Well, you know, we know, Wally knows, June knows, Ward knows, well, that's not going to work, because if we all eventually go that way, society will implode. Entropy will occur. We won't be a society anymore. And if we all keep the mentality of the strongest surviving, then Ward and Wally and June all want to look out for the beef.
The beef.
It still cracks me up.
Oh, God. I hear that and it infuriates me.
Well, you know, Guy, I mean, I'm sure you could see on my expressions when you watch the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I was one of those moments where, you know, you're thinking, is she really saying this? You know, I was part insulted and part just, you know, amazed that she either thought that I was so dumb as to be willing to go along with that, or that she was so enthusiastic about what she was saying that she truly believed it. And, I'm not really sure which it was.
I think she does, and that scares me. Why, the government? June Cleaver? This government, June Cleaver? Oh, my God. And we are wanting to do things contrary to the law? Oh, that just leaves me speechless, and I'm seldom speechless, but I have never seen anything that I thought was, A, it was insulting, and B, it was condescending like nothing I think I've ever seen before on the political stage.
Well, you know, the thing of it is like what you just said, that you think she was, like, believed it. I mean, I think, you know, to use that phrase, you know, that she has consumed so much Kool-Aid that I'm not sure she knows the difference anymore. And so, you know, because you can tell she's very proud and enamored with the story.
Oh, you know, yeah.
She can hear it in her voice and you can see it in her face. She's thrilled with what she's saying.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to tell this guy the beef story, and that'll convince him that that we're, you know, it had to be a treat being at this Justice Sunday, because you actually did some filming in there.
Yeah, we did.
How did you get away with that?
They granted my request and gave us press passes. I'm not sure why. I mean, maybe because they had, you know, I've been in the film business for quite a while, and I think they checked up on me and decided that I was legitimate. But I was very upfront with them that I was a liberal and I was going out to do this movie, and, you know, I didn't misrepresent myself. And I guess, you know, maybe they were operating under that assumption, you know, that old axiom, all press is good press. But it was truly like being in the belly of the beast. You know?
Yeah.
Being inside the Justice Sunday event and the singing before, and then the video screens, and this whole grand Orwellian orchestration of thought control was just fascinating and horrifying, and I couldn't wait to get out of there, even though I was transfixed by the spectacle.
Oh, tell them about what was this in Louisville?
Yes.
Yeah. Tell them about how I can't think of his name all of a sudden, the big honcho there that was running the whole show, but to introduce the preacher and all. Tell them about that.
You mean Tony Perkins?
Yeah, Tony Perkins.
Yeah, well, he was instructing the audience on how to behave. I mean, in fact, they say that, you know, we're instructing you on how to behave. And then he told everyone to to give standing ovations and you know, and to show enthusiasm and then later to, you know, call their senators. The whole purpose of the event was a political rally inside a megachurch.
Yeah, yeah. And it reminded me of being at the Dave Letterman show. You know, they come out and warm up the crowd ahead of time, say, okay, now when he comes out, everybody cheers, no, that's not good enough. Now let me really hear from you. And that's kind of like how Tony Perkins was acting there. And I thought, boy, this is this is bizarre.
Well, Guy, that's exactly why that stuff's in the movie. You know what I mean? It's the pre-stuff, because I wanted people to see what a production it was. And, you know, I'm in show business, you know, and I do that for a living sometimes, what, you know, that behind-the-scenes stuff. And, you know, so it was nothing new to me, but I thought it'd be interesting to folks who aren't familiar with show business to see how orchestrated an event like that was.
And orchestration is the right word, because that whole movement, to me, and encapsulating much of what you've said here, it is orchestrated. The people that didn't know what liberal actually was, they blindly walk into a scene like that, and listen, and go do what they're told to do. And that is no more American to me than I don't know what.
Exactly. And that, I think, is, you know, where we are at now. It's almost as that we've been reduced to talking about the basics again, the things that we used to always think we took for granted, you know, that we all shared this common Americanism. And, you know, the fact is that we don't. There are people who, I hate to say it, but who aren't really American at all. And these Justice Sunday folks are that. They don't believe in freedom and free speech and the right for all of us to live our lives unimpeded and uninvolved from the government. They want the government to enforce, you know, their moral code on the rest of us.
Yeah, they don't believe in government except where they want it, like Hazel, or what was her name? Was it Hazel?
Gladys.
Gladys. Yeah, I have to tell you, when she said that toward the end of her interview, before you cut the camera off, and then she thought the camera was off. That's an interesting thing, too. But when she said that you said, well, I was born the year of the Civil Rights Act and all this and that. And she said, well, yeah, and you don't know what it was like before then, you know. You don't know. And I thought, oh, God. That was an awful thing to say.
The key passage there for her, she says, you know, well, you don't know what it was like when we had liberty.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this
we had liberty.
That's what exactly. That's what I'm talking about. You know, is this like you and I, you know, liberty means something completely different to us than it does to her. You know, and it's and again, I say, you know, I thought that we, you know, that we all kind of agreed on these things, liberty and freedom and so forth. But you know, but truly we don't.
Without question, liberty to her meant being able to turn away any black folks that would come and pay the full price for a house if she wanted it, and to make those people, like Sarge said, sit in the back room and eat the ice cream. That's what liberty meant to that lady.
Right.
Well, what did you, Michael, after it was all said and done and you got this, you got back and you had time to think about it. First of all, let me ask you a couple little intricacies of the whole thing. How many people did you have with you on this thing?
There was four of us. There was myself, two cameramen, and a sound guy. Okay. And we traveled in two vehicles for 10,000 miles.
Okay. Oh, wow. Great trip. I've driven this country as well. And I've just been in about any place that is any place in this country, and I enjoy that so much. I'd leave right now if I had a chance to do it again. I just love it. And I think a lot of the folks that you talked to there were in the West, and I think by and large the West is full of really friendly folks. Even if we don't agree with them, they're respectful and friendly, maybe even a little more so than most other places in the country I've found. What did you come away with after this whole thing was over?
Well, it's really complicated, of course, because it was, you know, it was a very profound experience on my life as well as a filmmaker. And so, you know, I came away with some of the things I've been saying, like just a moment ago, talking about these different conceptions of liberty and so forth. And, you know, these are things that I've understood but didn't fully understand, you know. And after that trip, I did. It made the choice before us all the more stark. But I also, you know, I did find that I had been, you know, unfairly objectifying some people, and I learned from that. I learned that while these folks have demonized us, as you were talking about the use of the word liberal and so forth, you know, I at least have demonized some of them in return. And you know, it's easy to I guess I would say, turn away from Christians because some of these people who call themselves Christians are behaving so reprehensibly. But, you know, and I think that's a mistake. You know, I think that everyone should be part of the solution, regardless of their faith or creed or, you know, all that stuff. So, you know, I learned those things. And I learned that, you know, this country is just a really amazingly beautiful place, and it's worth us, you know, having this fight for it. And unfortunately, it is a fight. We need, you know, this last election was a great conclusion, but it's just the beginning of us needing to get these people out of politics.
Do you think that any of the people that were on the CD, on the DVD, rather, do you think any of the folks on there could be swayed in their beliefs on politics?
No, I don't.
And it's pretty much an absolutely no, right?
I think so, and I think that, you know, the folks that are in the movie, I mean, you know, the vast majority of them, not every single one, but the vast majority of them, those are the people who are still answering yes to the George Bush polling question.
Yes.
You know, those are the 31% or 35% or however low his approval rating is now. These are the people who still approve of him. And, you know, they would approve of him regardless of any news that came out. You know, it is empirical evidence. Their sense is none of that matter. You know, they have placed their faith in him, and that's the end of it. It is not to be thought of anymore.
The one fellow you had on there was that I'd forgot to talk about. He was what, a car dealer?
Yeah, Chris.
He was, how did you run across him? He was more, well, he was compared to the other ones, he's a leftist, but he wasn't really, but compared to some of the other ones he was very fair-minded, I thought, in many ways.
Well, Guy, you know, I think he's that old school kind of Republican, you know, the
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. I've been looking for that. The old school Republican. I often say on this program, I do not have any quarrel with old school Republicans. We have honest differences.
Yeah, absolutely. And that brings up, you know, one of the, I guess, you know, when you asked about why I started the movie, well, this is really it. You know, when I was a kid, you know, Nixon was president, and I grew up in a Republican town, and, you know, the people, they were all Republicans, but they were Republicans because of those honest differences that you said. You know, it was about tax policy, or it was about the economy, or it was about defense. You know, and you could argue with them because their Republicanism was based on reason. It may not have been reasons I agreed with or that you agree with, but it was based on reason.
Yes.
You know, these, and Chris embodied that in the movie. But, you know, those people, one, they're not running the Republican Party anymore.
No.
And the people that, the Republicans that lost all over New England, in the election a few weeks ago, were those kind of Republicans. And, you know, those kind of Republicans are being drummed out of the party. And so what's left is these Republicans of faith, but not of reason. And there is no arguing with them. There is no, having an honest disagreement because you're not even speaking the same language.
Exactly. And I think there's going to be an internecine war to go on there inside that party. I think there's going to be a real battle for control of it, but I'm afraid who's going to win.
I think what's really interesting, you know, is and we've talked about the demonization of the word liberal, how these folks have set out to essentially destroy the word. Well, you know, I think it's great, with great irony, they have now also, you know, not through intent but through incompetence, destroyed the word conservative.
Yes.
You know, they're now all turning on each other and fighting over the word. And it's because they have, you know, they have by their actions rendered it meaningless.
Very well put. I came away with this for everybody's benefit here. I came away from this movie, I don't know, I guess a little sad. I guess with maybe a point proven to me that it will do me no good to try and sway people's minds of that mindset, that it is so rock solid that there's no use. I also came away with it with the same thing that you had verbalized earlier on, that you had found that a lot of these people, they weren't demons or nasty people. They were just had completely different views, and they were decent people. And so I came away with that as well. I would encourage everybody to see this. We've just touched a little bit about what the whole thing's about and some of the people in it. It's just so fascinating. And once again, we're at redstatesthemovie.com. You can get all the information on there.
Right, Red State, singular. Red State, the movie.
Red State, the movie.
Yeah.
.com. You know, Michael, I have to tell you, I've had a lot of great people, interesting people, famous people, and all that on this program. I don't think I ever enjoyed talking to somebody in an interview more than I have with you. This has been just fascinating to me.
Thank you, Guy. That's wonderful. I appreciate that. I've really enjoyed my time, too. I'd like to say to everyone, you know, I'm actually going to be in Atlanta all winter. And I'm directing a television show. That's kind of how I make a living. And so we're setting up screenings around the South, and if anyone is listening and they want to go to the website, that would be great, because I'm happy to drive over on the weekend and, you know, attend a screening. And so I'd encourage everyone to do that if they're interested.
Very good. Very good. That's good to know. Well, Michael, thank you so much. It's great talking to you, and I encourage everybody to see this. And, of course, after you're off today, we'll mention it again and hope you get some hits off of that. Michael, thank you so much. Michael Shea.
Thank you very much, Guy. I hope to meet you in person someday.
It would be great. Thank you.
Bye.
You know what? Now, there you go, that declarative sentence. You know what? Then, you know, down some places in Texas and Oklahoma, there'd just be a circle of guys sitting around chewing tobacco, and that's the only thing they say all day long. Look at one another and go, you know what? I'll tell you what. Anyway, I didn't need to say that, did I? Anyway, yeah, Michael's a terrifically interesting guy, and he sent me that DVD, I don't know, a month ago. And we get so much stuff like that here at the show, and I put it off and put it off and put it off, and finally over Thanksgiving holiday, I had a chance to sit down and write that and watch it, and it was like, oh my God, this is so good. And believe me, if you can set up a viewing of this with a group, it'd be a great thing to do. I know I'm certainly going to put it before our local club here, and they'll see it. Everybody ought to see this. So I guess I've gone on long enough about it, but I was tremendously impressed, as you can tell. We're going to stop for the news right now, okay? We'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush is now on his way back to Washington following his brief summit with Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki in Jordan, after which the president described him as a courageous leader and the right guy for Iraq. Mr. Bush also promising more resources to speed up the training of Iraqi forces and saying once again that U.S. troops will remain in Iraq until the job is done. But the bipartisan Iraq study group headed by James Baker and Lee Hamilton will reportedly recommend a gradual pullback of U.S. troops there, though no specific timetable, as well as recommending direct diplomacy with both Syria and Iran. The group's recommendations are being unveiled next week. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice made a quick trip to Gaza and Israel today, meeting with both leaders to urge a revival of the peace process and encourage an expansion of the new five-day-old ceasefire in Gaza. Pope Benedict is in Istanbul as he continues his four-day trip to Turkey, today becoming only the second pope ever to visit a mosque. In this case, it was the Blue Mosque, considered by many to be the most beautiful place of Islamic worship in the world. He also today spent some time with Bartholomew I, the leader of the world's 300 million Orthodox Christians. A new contender threw his hat in the presidential ring today, outgoing Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack, becoming the first Democrat to do so. Winter weather blowing through a dozen states today, dropping heavy snow from New Mexico to Illinois. And in Seattle, it's now official, the wettest November in the city's history, 15.5 inches of precipitation. The old record was set back in 1933. Today marks an official end to the Atlantic hurricane season, a season during which Florida and the Gulf Coast were spared even one hurricane, a relief in as much as they're still trying to recover from last year's deadly season. And in the northern Philippines, as being slammed by a super typhoon, the fifth typhoon to hit the country this year, this one with winds of up to 135 miles an hour, expected to hit Manila later today. Japan says it has the capacity to develop a nuclear weapon, but though it has the technological know-how, Japan's foreign minister says they have no immediate plans to develop such weapons. Mexico's president-elect, Felipe Calderón, is preparing to take the reins of power. His inauguration takes place tomorrow in Mexico City, where protests continue in support of the man he narrowly defeated in the election, the former mayor of Mexico City. And the Department of Justice reports that the number of people incarcerated or on probation or parole in the U.S. last year topped 7 million, a new record. Of those, 2.2 million were in prison or jail, and that reflects an increase of 2.7% over 2004. And while men far outnumber women, the female population, they say, is growing. This is the Quality News Network, scientific and business news coming up next.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
Physicist Stephen Hawking has been awarded the prestigious Copley Medal in London for his work in theoretical physics and cosmology, and where he says his next goal is to travel into space. Also says that the future of the human race depends on colonizing other planets. A warning from the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists is that pregnant women should not take the antidepressant Paxil because of the risk of birth defects. The Airbus A380 Super Jumbo Jet, the world's largest passenger airplane, has completed the last leg of its 18-day test mission, which took it around the world. Now it awaits approval from U.S. and European safety regulators, expected in mid-December. The Super Jumbo, which can carry 840 passengers, is scheduled to begin service next year. Angola, the second largest oil producer in Africa and largest supplier of crude to China, will apply next month to become the newest member of OPEC. Sudan and Ecuador have also expressed interest in joining the oil cartel. Walmart says it expects its December sales to go up no more than 1% below Wall Street forecasts. This after reporting its November sales were down. And Microsoft launches its new Vista system today. The first time in 5 years, the company has unveiled a new system for operating personal computers. Light sweet crude up 49 cents a barrel this hour, trading at $62.95 a barrel. On Wall Street, trading is mixed. The Dow is down 14 points at 12,212. NASDAQ is up 5 at 2436. And the S&P 500 is up 1 at an even 1400. More at Quality News.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, welcome back. No, your clocks aren't wrong. I'm way off on my schedule here. Went right through the top of the hour and on beyond. That's the longest interview we've ever had in this program, and I'm not a bit sorry about it because that to me, I love talking to that man. I really do. If you'd see this DVD, you'd understand a little more even why. You can tell that he's a great guy, plus the fact that he does terrific work on that. Red State, the movie. Check it out. I hope you will. You'll hear me promoting that. I don't have any interest in it. No financial interest in it, of course. And I don't think it's a money-making project for him. But man, oh man, it's one of the best filming jobs I've seen in a long, long time. The man's great at what he does. 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you. 866-546-5254. Had something. Oh, I know. I know what. Hang on just a little here. I got to find it. I promised you something special. Yes, I did. I just got to see if the orchestra's ready. Should I give you just a little bit of forewarning, get everybody a little forewarning, that we are going to have a few minutes of Republican love on the program? Okay? A few minutes of Republican love. Let's see. We had a piano and a harpist come in today. There they are. We have them in the background in the studio here. And we turn the lights down just a little bit. And we bring you a few minutes of Republican love. This is from Ruby. Subject, you're sick. You're all so sick and need help that only God can give you. This is typed in all caps, by the way. The reason you hate George W. Bush is because he is a man of truth. But more than that, he is a born-again Christian, and I pray that God will convict each and every one of you so deeply for the things you're saying about a man of God. The Bible plainly warns us against this. Ruby. Well, Ruby, I don't know what to say. Wait a minute, there's more. She says, I don't need an email back. In fact, I don't want to hear the kind of propaganda that all of you are putting out. You're desperate, you far-left liberals. You don't have a clue as to what is good and right. You are immoral. And that's what you really want for America, just like the terrorists want. George W. Bush has us headed in the right direction, and you are trying to divide and make two Americas. Your speeches and evil words will not get it. Get on your knees and pray. That way you can make a difference. But the way you are headed is totally wrong, and you will not win this way. You can catch more flies with honey than with bitterness. That's from Ruby. I'm trying to take her own advice here about taking the more flies with honey than with bitterness. This one is, actually it's unsigned. Why are we in Iraq? To hunt down the terrorist one by one, or have all of you left-wing liberals forgotten about the true 9/11? It's so sad to see the ignorance, the cruelty, the self-righteousness, the hypocritical thoughts and views that you spew from your radio pulpit. It's enough to make anybody throw up. You should be praying for your president instead of insulting him. Why don't you leave this country and move to Afghanistan, where they would treat you the way you deserve, with a bullet through your head? Ooh, that's a little harsh. I didn't know I deserved that. Well, it goes on to say, it hurts to hear the truth, I'm sure. But you don't seem to have a problem dishing it out, so I'm sure you can take it. Well, you're right on both counts there. I don't have a problem dishing it out, and I don't mind taking it either. Even from a Looney Tunes, well, let me finish it first. Goes on to say, one day you'll be saddened and ashamed for the way that you so meanly criticized President Bush. History will show that he will probably be the greatest president that ever lived. I feel sorry for you and would never want to be you. You and your friends are all lost souls, wandering the earth, trying to find peace. Well, what can you say to that? The next one here. This is from Bill. I'm sure it's not the Bill we know on the program here. Left-wing, leaning, stinking pinko. Well, now that's more like it. My country is having problems because of rats like you. As far as I'm concerned, people like you, Malloy, and Franken, well, now, they didn't have to bring Mike into this. Gee, that's not fair. People like you, Malloy, and Franken, now, this person must waste a lot of time listening to right-wing radio, or left-wing radio, huh? That's a good thing, isn't it? Okay. Back to the letter here. As far as I'm concerned, people like you, Malloy, and Franken need to stand down range of my bullets. Traitors, seditious scumbags. And this one's really got me puzzled here. It says, by the way, Bill Gates sucks. Where did that come from? I don't recall even talking to him lately. Talking about him. Okay, here's another one. You are a big fat idiot. All liberals are the same. Well, and I've seen some skinny liberals. I have. You're all the same. Name-calling, lying, cheating idiots. Just like your leader, Slick Willie. I love being called a name-caller by somebody that's calling me names anyway. This seems odd to me. Here's the next one. I heard your comments about Rush Limbaugh. Shame on you, you idiot. Hey, this is Rich here. Rush is the source of true knowledge, not your liberal media controlled by the Clinton puppets like you. You people are just jealous of his fame and influence among the intelligent majority American people. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. That's from Kristen. Thank you, Kristen. And here's another anonymous one. And it's my favorite, I suppose. The nicest thing about heaven will be that there will be no liberals there. We won't have to listen to them whining about all the degenerates and perverts of the universe being mistreated by being allowed to experience the consequences of their evil behavior. Well, this sure isn't very nice. We won't have to hear them plead for us to give up our hard-earned dollars to keep crackheads and other degenerates like you in dope in the name of fairness and kindness. Whew. We won't have to listen to them try to teach that evil is good and good is evil, that obedience to God's law is hatred, and antinomianism, whatever that means, oh, it's lawless for those of you in Rio Lindo, is loving. We won't have to listen to them dishonor the laws and the name of God who gives them every breath of life they take. We won't have to put up with Guy James, Jesse Jackson, Robert Schuller. Where did this come from? Mike Malloy and any of the Kennedys, Al Sharpton, and the San Francisco chapter of Dykes on Bikes, better known as the Now Gang. The Bible. Oh, dare they mention the Bible in this. The Bible makes it very clear that only those who keep the law of God will be in heaven with him. What a relief that someday we won't have to hear these people anymore. We'll be listening. Watch it. Anonymous. Oh, that's mighty nice of those folks to send us their love. Yes, their love. And thus ends a few minutes of Republican love. Oh, yeah, I'm back. I had to go wash my hands and wash my mouth out with soap after after reading those letters. It was good to hear from those folks. It really was. We used to get so much good hate mail. And let me explain to some of you that don't know the story by this about this, how we all of a sudden got a bunch of them today and actually yet today and yesterday. Normally, we haven't been getting them for a long, long time. And I posted something on a right-wing website and about our show, and just to try and, like I said, prime the pump a little bit and see if I could get some of these folks to listen, and they are listening, and they, I guess they didn't like what they heard, but what fascinated me, one of them in there said, what, me, Malloy, who was it, Al Sharpton and Robert Schuller? What did Robert, yeah, Jesse Jackson, Guy James, and Robert Schuller, and the other one mentioned Mike Malloy and Al Franken. Can stand down range of my bullets. Oh, traitor scumbag. Oh, traitor seditious scumbag. I wanted to get it all in there. These are some fine folks. I still like to know where Robert Schuller comes in somewhere. I really would like to have that one explained. If whoever wrote that's listening, could you please send me another little note and let me know how Robert Schuller got in on this? Let's go to the phone. I'm in a jovial mood now. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
listen, one thing about your Republican love, I miss the old music.
Oh, yeah, the...
Yeah,
we had an orchestra.
That really just...
Well, I'll have to dig that out somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's just classical. But anyway, I've got a new hero, is Webb. Isn't he great?
Yes, he is. I was proud of him.
But he's been talking about helping people, too. You know, he doesn't like... That's one reason he left the Republican Party, was because he believed that... we the people should be helped, you know.
Right.
We, instead of what is it? The
well, I always
people
like
people that are supposed to earn all the money, corporations.
Yeah.
We the corporation.
You know, I was at Thanksgiving dinner the other day, and with our good friends, And Elaine's parents were there as well. And so I don't know what it was, about eight of us. And we decided to go around the table and talk about why we were Democrats, because everybody at the table was a Democrat.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and that was especially good. And my friend Gene, I don't think you can say it any better or in any fewer words than he said. Why am I a Democrat? Because I know we're all in this together.
Yeah.
And I think that just about sums it up.
Yeah. And the one that told you to leave here and go to Afghanistan?
Yeah. I wasn't planning on doing any traveling.
Well, but you know, they'll say, if you don't like this country, leave it. Well, what is our country all about? I thought it was having liberty and not walking goose steps.
Not unless we say something they don't like.
But, I think they should go to a country, you know, that where everybody thinks alike, you know.
Well, there are some places here in this country where everybody thinks alike.
I know. Well, you know, I'm not really too surprised about the red state since I am a Southerner, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was a culture shock to him. But wasn't he nice to... He learned to like the people and see, you know, probably see what the problem was.
Yeah, that we weren't necessarily dealing with people with horns on. We were just talking with a lot of people that have been, let's say it how it
They've
is,
been
brainwashed.
Told this stuff so much.
Yes.
And like he's, I don't know if he said it or somebody, but Rush Limbaugh, you know, that's what I think he's the most responsible for, is feeding people like those people lines, you know, and they don't know any better, but he does.
I'm being told on the chat room that they want you to come to the chat room.
Well, I finally got Sue, I finally got it set up. So
all right, well, good.
Try to get on there.
All righty.
Okay,
hey, thanks
you
for your call.
Bye-bye.
It was quite an epiphany for me watching that DVD, The Red State. I sit here day after day and honestly in my personal life, and it's hard for me sometimes to think that a lot of these people don't have that they don't have horns on. It was good to see some people, good, decent, civil people, but on the other hand, you look at them and you know that they've been brainwashed terribly. Just terribly. I'm fascinated by how brainwashed people can be. And it's not that they're necessarily stupid, because I know some pretty smart people that are, you know, they're hardcore Republicans. So I don't, you know, you don't, stupidity isn't necessarily the answer. I was looking for a little note I had here. I'm going to have to find this, because you got to hear this. Oh, here it is. Here we go. And I'll get to the phone in just a second. Everybody hang on the phone. The title of this is "Are George W. Bush Lovers Certifiable?" by Andy Bromage. A collective I told you so will ripple through the world of Bush bashers once news of Christopher Lowe's study gets out. Lowe's a social worker, master student at Southern Connecticut State University, says he has proven what many progressives have probably suspected for years, a direct link between mental illness and support for President Bush. Lowe says his study is no joke. The thesis draws on a survey of 69 psychiatric outpatients in three Connecticut locations during the 2004 presidential election. Lowe's study, backed by Southern Connecticut State University psychology professor Jack Rackfeld and statistician Misty Giancola, found a correlation between the severity of a person's psychosis and their preference for president. The more psychotic the voter, the more likely they were to vote for Bush. Wow. The more psychotic they were, the more likely they were to vote for Bush. And this is from a study from Southern Connecticut State University. The more psychotic they are, that's testing 69 students. Well, Can't say I'm surprised about that. Hey, let's go with the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, this is Mike. How you doing today?
Hi, Mike.
Yeah, I hope you got my email. I'm sure plenty in there for you to chew on.
Yeah, I haven't chewed on all of it yet.
Well, I wouldn't expect you had. It's quite a long time. We're really busy down here with the Postal Service, so getting ready for Christmas and all, so I hadn't had an opportunity really to be really politically involved. I hope your Thanksgiving was very well, and looking forward to all the football coming up here this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's just one game that matters to me this weekend, and that's, I'll watch all of them that I can, but the UCLA Southern Cal game is the only one that means anything to me.
Which one of them would you prefer to see?
To go against the Buckeyes?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't really care. I have to tell you, as an Ohio State fan, we hate Southern Cal.
There you go. I'd like to see Southern Cal because I think they're just a better football team.
Yeah, they are. That's what I want. I want the best.
I think Ohio State is the class of the field this year. I don't think there's really any doubt about that, but they have to prove it on the field.
Well, I hope they are.
That's going to be a good game, though. I'll be rooting for them. But, so what's going on today? What I haven't had an opportunity to listen to the show today because I've been
we had a great filmmaker who traveled the country and made a movie called Red State the Movie, and he went around into all the red states and interviewed folks as to why they're red states, and it was very interesting. He met a nice couple from your hometown first of all, and he went up through Arkansas. He went all the way across to Charleston, South Carolina, and to Texas, Wyoming, Idaho, every place that was a red state. He went around and made this film. It was really good. It proved that not everybody on the right's a demon, and which many of us were just shocked to find that out. And also showed, I think, the futility of, and I'm sure if somebody made a blue state movie, it also showed the futility of trying to change somebody's mind when it's completely made up.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, it's just like me and you talking. You know you're not going to convince me. I know I'm not going to convince you. It's interesting conversation.
Why is that?
Well,
when you get a fact shoved in your face, why can't you buy it? I mean, I will. I'll buy it if I get a good fact.
Oh, yeah, I will too. And, I mean, if it's a fact that I recognize and I accept, you know, the sourcing and all of that stuff, there are some things that are absolutes. I mean, black is black, white is white.
Well, let me ask you a question before, and we'll find out in the coming months. If they start some hearings, and they're going to, and if you find out that it's an irrefutable fact that we went to war in Iraq on, let's say, a prevarication, what'll that do to you?
It would change my opinion.
Okay.
I mean, if it's provable that it was a lie, then you can't argue with that.
No, if they prove it. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. There's going to be some hearings and all that. I guess we all knew that. And
the only thing I don't care if they have hearings one way or the other. I don't think it's going to be productive for Democrats, and so that's why it doesn't bother me if they're going to do it, because it just prevents them from doing other things. Now the Democrats have an opportunity. They've been given an opportunity here to put their words into action. And you know, if they do what they say they're going to do, I mean, well, I'm not going to get with the things they're going to do, but
well, Democrats that's what I've been preaching.
They won the election, and so it's their turn and their opportunity to try to do some of those things they were saying. It's kind of interesting, though, that a lot of the things that the Democrats were talking about before the election is, you know, they're backpedaling a lot of those things.
What would those be?
Well, the Iraq war. You know, they keep talking, well, the redeployment, they're talking this, but there's no way they're going to do it. They're not going to be able to.
Well, we shall see.
If they're really serious about doing it, then they should defund the war. They should cut off the funds.
Yeah, I agree. And I've been preaching that on this program. And
I don't think they had the political cojones to do that. I just don't. And I just like my side doesn't have the political cojones to go in there and do it the way I thought it should have been done in the beginning. Just go in there, do it the right way, and get out.
Well, I mean, they are all politicians, after all.
Yeah, I mean, even if you disagree with the war, I'm sure you would agree if we're going to do it, go in there and do it and get out. Even if you disagree with, okay, if it's inevitable they're going to do it, go in there, get it done, and get the heck out.
Well, I can't say I can't say I felt that way about this one, because going in and getting it over with and getting out in a political military manner, in which you're talking about, would have meant killing a whole lot more people than we have, and I'm not so sure I'd agree with that. I know I wouldn't agree with that.
Okay, well, yeah, and you know, and that's a fair. I mean, I think you're being honest there. I don't think that's.
You know, whether or not the war was prosecuted properly, I mean, I think we all know it was not. If you put yourself in a military man's shoes, I've got some notes sitting here from Paul Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld before the war, and the argument they had with the military people about how many people should have been used in there. And General Shinseki and all of those said they needed a lot more people, and yet we had this administration claiming we didn't. Now, whether or not the war should have started or not, the idea that they went to war with sorely lacking enough people and enough equipment and so forth, that in and of itself was a disaster, and yet no one has admitted that as of yet.
The in the email that I sent you guys, you know, I don't want to dominate the whole show, so I'll let you go here pretty quick. But excuse me, what do you think about the fence issue? You know, when I emailed you about that,
you're my honest opinion.
Yeah,
I will upset some people with saying what I'm about to say, but this is my honest opinion. This is not from my heart, but intellectually. I believe that it is inevitable that this country will be a mixture of Spanish, black, white, and all kinds of people. I don't know of a nation ever on the face of the earth, a major country anyway that mattered, has been able to keep their country, let's say, pure the way they wanted to. I think there is nothing we can do to stop the immigration, illegal immigration into this country, and I think we better find a way to cope with it. Now, I know a lot of people would hate me for saying that, but that's how I feel. I mean,
there's a lot of people that feel the way you do, Guy. It's just, I just don't think that intellectually that is a valid argument simply because of the way we live our lives. I mean, we construct fences to keep people out of our yards from crossing our property. We lock our doors when we go in at night to keep people from just walking in. I mean, we prove in our everyday lives that fences work. Now, is it perfect? Do people still break in houses? Yes, they do. But
well, that's a fence around your yard's a whole different thing than a fence around your country.
Well, I don't know, Guy.
I don't think that's a valid argument. It's not. A fence around your country is a whole different story than around your yard. I once figured that if they wanted to do this, the cost of the war many times now, I can't remember the exact numbers, but I figured we could put a man armed with a rifle and plenty of ammunition, I believe it was every 50 feet, three shifts a day around the entire border of the United States for what this war has cost, and that was a couple of years ago. The money it would cost to do it, I don't know. I just don't think it's going to work. I really don't. We've tried a lot of ways to try and keep people out of here. It hasn't worked. I don't blame them for wanting to come. When people are hungry, they're going to come here. And I don't think there's any way out of it. I really don't. Maybe 100 years from now, people will prove me absolutely wrong, but I think it's going to become a nation.
Well, the fences work quite well in California. The fence that's going along the California border over parts of Arizona.
They'll just find another way.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree that they will find ways to get in. The fact is, it's to try to lock the door. I mean, people are going to break in. That's fine. I mean, we accept that as part of life. I mean, because there's always going to be bad people. And people just wanting to come here to make a better life, that doesn't mean that they're bad people. I didn't mean to imply that. But you're always going to have people that are going to try to get here, and they're going to figure out a way to do it.
I didn't even think you meant it that way. So see you there.
Well, I know, but...
Hey, I got to go. I got a couple more calls on before the end of the show. Thanks for calling, Mike. And don't get too busy there at the post office.
Did you get your plaque?
Yes, I did. Thank you.
All right, good. Good deal.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
And let's go over to line one. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Phil in Daytona Beach.
Hi, Phil.
Hi. I got a problem yet with people advocating keeping our troops over there in Iraq. I think about, I don't know if Mike's a veteran himself or not, or, you know, my kid brother bought this whole Bush. Has Mike read the Downing Street memo or any of those?
You don't read what you know will undermine your beliefs. That's what I think.
It sounded like he's pretty open, you know. He said if you present him with some facts that he'd look at them.
I don't think Mike accepts the Downing Street memo as fact.
Yeah.
And that's what you run into.
Yeah,
I could get. I'm pretty sure that you and I could. I'll stop by Daytona and pick you up, and we'll drive up 95 to Washington, and we'll stop and talk to George Bush, and we'll have him sign a confession.
Yeah,
and we'll go on TV with a news conference and explain the whole thing, and we'll have George right there explain. Yes, I lied about it all. I was wrong about it all, and you know as well as I do, there'd be a lot of people out there say, "Well, I ain't buying that." I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, it really is a shame, you know, and I watched that film recently that just came out by Aaron Russo, America, Freedom to Fascism, and I believe if you go on the website freedomtofascism.com, you can learn where it's showing and all that. But at the end of the film, it said, it's time to stop being good Democrats. It's time to stop being good Republicans. It's time to start being good Americans. And boy, this media that's bought and paid for by the corporations that start these wars, they've done a great job as far as pitting us against each other. America is no longer being American is no longer being in the top slot.
Well, as you well know, being American to most of the corporations doesn't mean anything.
No, but I'm talking about, you know, the individuals here, the people on the other end of that TV set, you know.
The corporations, they fly flags out in front of their businesses. They don't care about America.
Sure.
That's the bottom line is what's American to them. It doesn't matter.
No, but it's just frustrating that I'm talking about individuals on the receiving end of the television, you know, the corporations on the output or whatever, you know, the inside of the television putting it out, have done a heck of a job. You know, they have been very successful, and people put their party before what's right and wrong.
I'm afraid that's right.
Well, one last thing I forgot what it was, and it's probably good because you maybe have another call.
No, I can't take another call. I'm down at the end of here. I got to go.
I would like to say the enlistment age for Mike is 42.
42 now.
And if your prior service, like my kid brother that left his wife and 6-month-old at 39 to go over to Iraq because he believed Fox News. You can re-up you add on your time in service if your prior service. Yeah. So you can go up to 48 years old, Mike.
Got to go. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye now. Yes, we are down at the end of another program. And my word, where'd the time go today? It's one of those days where the time just flew by, just absolutely flew by. And I do want to thank you so much for being with us today. This show to me meant a lot today. I hope I haven't overplayed it, but I don't think I have. Please, please, if you can, see this red state in America. Once again, the website is redstatethemovie.com. Redstatethemovie.com. If you could set up a viewing in your neighborhood or your Democrat club or however, it'd be a great thing. It really would. I guess Yeah, where am I at here? I'm down at the end of the program, and that's what you get for being the producer and the whole ball of wax here today. I do want to remind you once again that the Guy James Show is a proud member of the Head On Radio Network. And you've got good programming coming your way the rest of the evening here on the Head On Radio Network. So long until Tuesday. We'll be around tomorrow with a